As you likely know, the challenges confronting today's marriages are varied and complex. We are living longer, our parents are living longer, and the financial and work-life pressures that couples are trying to bear are more daunting than ever. Yet, couples are trying to make their marriages work better and longer than ever before. Under the best of circumstances, a rough patch in a marriage happens. With her new book, The Rough Patch, Dr. Daphne Namarniff discusses the challenges confronting today's couples and, with optimism, how they can persevere through them. Dr. Namarniff is the author of The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together. She is a psychologist and a couples therapist, and she joins us on the roundtable this morning where she speaks about how we define a rough patch.
I came up with the term the rough patch as sort of a way to articulate a moment that I see people struggling with, which is that they've set up their life, they've got their spouse, they've got their job, maybe they've got their kids, they've got a structure. And the structure may be working okay. But within that structure, they find that their passion, their emotion, is confusing, complicated, feeling dead, feeling stuck. And so I think the rough patch in a developmental psychological sense is this moment of sort of maximal conflict between feeling I've got my life and yet somehow it's not satisfying me. And then the question is, how am I going to deal with my own emotions, my own baggage from the past, what I want in life, and move forward in a vital, loving way? And so that is the sort of framework of the book, and that's why I entitled it The Rough Patch. But then I talk about a lot of, as I said, the very normal crises that people have just by virtue of going through life, whether it's with kids or with work or with alcohol or with affairs or with financial pressures or what have you.
You make the point in the book, and here's the good news, right, that people are working harder than they did a generation before to make their marriages work. We have always heard the statistics that half the marriages end in divorce. But numbers are improving. People are trying to stay married longer.
I think they are, and I think we have a sort of cultural understanding now, often based on all the research that's come out of psychology, about relationships, how important they are for our health, how important they are for our happiness. Also, we've learned so much about emotional regulation. Mindfulness has exploded as something that people are interested in the broader culture. So I think we have a language now for certain aspects of relationships and emotions that we just didn't have 30 or 40 years ago. And I also think for people who sort of lived through the divorce boom of the, you know, 70s and 80s, which many of the couples with children did, you know, they see that there are real risks to the model of thinking that, you know, if I just get rid of this spouse, my life will be better. You know, they've seen the complications of that point of view. And often they're really trying to do something different.
As a couples therapist, at what point do you think people need to see a professional, and how much of it can be worked out on their own if they have the framework that you lay out in the book?
Well, you know, I partly wrote the book because at working as a couple therapist for all these years and thinking so deeply about these issues, I feel there is a lot of knowledge that I'm hoping if it's put in a book, people can sit down and read this and get actual help. And I've been incredibly gratified when people have said to me, you know, I read your book and I'm actually nicer to my husband now, because I do hope that it has a therapeutic effect that can help people understand their situation, first of all, and then possibly behave differently in their situation. So my belief is that if you're not able to have a productive conversation about the important issues in your life together, you may need help. And conversations can work in a lot of different ways. But if you feel that you keep getting stuck or it keeps breaking down or you never get to solve anything because you so provoke each other and you end up going to different rooms in the house or starting to scream, in other words, you can't talk long enough to solve any of the substantive problems in front of you, then I think it really makes sense to get help.
This perhaps is more a sociological question than it is a psychological question. But with people waiting on average, with people waiting longer to get married, is that showing us two adults who are more mature, which is allowing us to see marriages last a little bit longer?
Well, you know, I'm not really familiar with the statistics, but there are a lot of ideas swirling around in the culture about that. I mean, one of my big points in this book is that if you're going to sustain a fulfilling, long marriage, there has to be room for both individuals in that marriage. In other words, each person has to keep growing and developing as a person, as well as being part of this unit called the marriage. And so I think one advantage of the fact that people marry later is that they have more time as a solo, as an individual, to explore, to learn about themselves, to put themselves in a lot of different situations, hopefully have different relationships, and they learn more about who they are. And that can be enormously useful in the project of marriage. I mean, there is an alternative point of view. You might have heard of the capstone versus the cornerstone model of marriage, you know, that marriage comes after you've done all this self-development and achieved all these things, and that's the capstone or cornerstone is you marry young and then you grow and build this together. And some people say that all this individual experimentation actually makes people less likely to be able to commit to a marriage. But I think it's very individual. It's very cultural and subcultural within the country, but I do think marriages thrive when there is an optimal balance of individual growth and development and interests and room for people to be, an individual, and they both nurture the marriage.
And it obviously has an effect on children as well, in the sense that people, if they're getting married later, are having children later. So, and that, as you write, is children often a great stress on a relationship.
Right. So I teach a class to couples who are about to have their first child, and I practice in San Francisco. And so the people there tend to be older on average relative to the rest of the country. And a lot of them say things like they're excited about having a baby, but they're afraid at how it's going to sort of take them away from the life they've already had. So there is this question of, you know, if you've developed this wonderful couple life and now you're adding a kid, there is a bit of trepidation on that. Because children are a stress on marriage. Of course, they're one of the main reasons people get married and try to stay married, is to provide a secure and loving home for their children. And at the same time, children are a lot of responsibility, they're a lot of work, they're a lot of worry, and all those things tax the individuals and tax the system and can make us more prone to feel overwhelmed or stressed or take out our moods on other people and to not have as much time to get over our little tiffs or to make up or to have romance and so forth. So it's a really mixed bag, and I think it's important for people to know that just statistically, children do tend to decrease marital satisfaction, at least for some stretch of time. But if you find that you're in constant conflict about the kids, you can never get on the same page, you know, you have totally different parenting philosophies, all those things are signs that you really need to get some sort of help to get you to be a more united co-parenting team, because that will really feed the emotional satisfaction between you as a couple.
And then, in an ironic twist, when the children are out and the nest is empty, that can also be a problem.
It can. It's so interesting to me, having just had my last child leave, to find that people are all over the board with this. Some people feel, wow, finally we have some breathing room. You know, I love my kids, but now they're launched. And there is this feeling of we can have fun together again in a whole new way. And for other people, their meaning system has become so wrapped up in the kids, and maybe they've put the relationship sort of on the back burner, and they're terrified that now without the kids there as the shared project, is there anything left? And my advice to people at that stage of life is to really think of yourself as a beginner in this new phase. You know, by the time we're 50 or so, we're kind of like, well, I know it all, and I know this person I'm married to, and it's all very predictable. But actually, the attitude to cultivate is, this is a new chapter. Who am I now? Who is this other person now? You always have the chance to change your relationship. You know, you basically have a chance to change until you're in the grave. And so I really counsel people to not feel ashamed that they feel lost, but to use that as an opportunity to say, okay, well, who are we now and what do we want?
You have a chapter in the book about affairs, flirting, and fantasy. They're never about nothing. You write in that chapter, a truism about affairs is that it is not the sex, but the deception that hurts the most. And I assume that's what you see when you deal with this in therapy.
Well, you know, it's very individual, of course, but it is a huge breakdown of trust. And one thing I talk about in that chapter is that to sustain a sexually monogamous relationship over decades is a challenge, and that people don't necessarily talk about their values about that early on, because, of course, when you get married, it's your aspiration is completely romantic. You want to feel that you'll never be attracted to another person, that this is your one true love. But it would help people, I think, to have more honest conversations about the struggles of this, because I think people don't, and then they act out, and then the damage is even greater. And one thing I really emphasize in this book is it takes guts to have the hard conversations, and it never stops taking guts. And I believe you're doing it right if you are having the conversations that take a certain amount of courage. So say you are attracted to your, you know, kid's sixth grade teacher. You know, you're not going to just mention that lightly, but if you really feel in danger of acting out, it's better to talk about it before than after.
And I understand that aspect of it, but certainly at the beginning of a relationship and once a couple is married and or committed to one another, there is certainly that is an unwritten rule that it's going to be a monogamous relationship, isn't there? I mean, that's ingrained into it that you're not going to do that.
Well, it is ingrained, I think, for most people, and it's the aspiration for most people, or a lot of people, I would say. And I think one reason affairs happen is that people want to be doing two contradictory things at the same time. They both continue to have some kind of romantic aspiration for their marriage and want it to be the one and only, but they also are tempted or conflicted or dissatisfied and decide to do something else at the same time. And I actually think that if people could somehow find a way, and I'm not saying this is easy, and it isn't for everybody, but if people could find a way to say, look, here we are, we have this relationship, I'd like it to maybe be more exciting, how might we do that? I find myself sort of thinking about other people, I feel bad about that. In other words, to sort of admit that this is going to be, for many people, part of the picture, and it doesn't mean anything necessarily about the marriage itself, other than that you're trying to sustain a long, vital relationship, and that can be challenging.
Obviously, Daphne, this comes as no shock to anybody, but we are different people than in our 20s than we are in our 40s, 50s, and 60s, or 80s. And mm-hmm. we change. And as you mentioned just a moment ago, that we do grow, but we also have to grow as a couple as well as, mm-hmm. as individually. What are the keystones to keeping that as we go through these various cycles in age and become a different generation mm-hmm. together in most cases, that you look at it and say, all right, this is something that I'm going through, but this is all something that we are going through.
Right. So it's a great question. So often people come into therapy when one person is saying, I need this to be different. I need more closeness, or I need something. And the other is saying something like, well, wait a minute, that wasn't our deal. You know, that wasn't our contract. You know, we got married, you know, and the relationship was this, and suddenly you want this other thing. And in my view, the contract will, of course, keep changing. You know, in other words, we change, so we need different things. And the flexibility and the resilience of the marriage has to do with, can you both have that hard conversation, listen to how the other person's changing, and see how you might accommodate it? And I think that when people's conversations break down, when they can't keep turning to each other and saying, hey, what do we want now? How can we work this out? How can we make room for the different things we both want? How can we compromise? When people don't do that, then they, you know, wake up at 40 or 50 or 60 and say, like, we grew apart, you know, and they just leave it at that. But I think a marriage is kind of a living, breathing creation, and you keep bringing to it who you are now, and you see how you can work out an arrangement that allows both people to thrive.
It does seem, and I know this sounds cliche, but you do touch on this in the book, and I do think it's important, that if you go through something that is really a test to the relationship and a test mm-hmm. to the marriage, and you come through it on the other side, that does make things much, much stronger, doesn't it?
I think it does. I think everyone is going to be tested. And when you do find a way through it that feels sort of satisfying or functional to each of you, I think there's a certain pride in that and a certain sense of solidity and a certain sense of depth because it wasn't easy. And you both rolled up your sleeves and did the work and figured out how to get through it together. And you see qualities in the other person that you admire, you know, the way they listened to you or the way they were strong or the way they bore all their pain and kept being vulnerable to you. I mean, those are things that are incredibly meaningful to people. And, you know, I wouldn't say that, you know, you'd invite a crisis. You know, if you cannot have it, it's right. probably less traumatic than if you have to have it. But we do learn things through adversity, of course.
Daphne DeMarnef is a psychologist and a couples therapist. She is also the author of the new book, The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together. The book is published by Scribner. Daphne, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure having you on the program.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Rough Patch, Marriage and the Art of Living Together by Daphne DeBarnef. It is published by Scribner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.